welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
Well, how's everybody doing today?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I have to pee, and that's the energy I've brought to this podcast.
Oh. We have been sitting here just pre-recording chatting for an hour now.
Yeah, you could have peed at any time.
Did it just hate you?
Sometimes I think I've said this before. I like to bring this energy to the show.
The pee holding energy?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's actually not good to hold your pee.
Nobody I didn't think so.
No.
When you have to go potty, stop and go right away. Do you guys not know this one?
No.
I have somehow missed this.
I don't know this hit.
Flush yeah. and wash and be on your way.
Well, now, Sid, you know the song and everything. How did you not... How'd you mess this up?
I don't know. It's really bad because you shouldn't hold it. You should go when you have to go. But between like residency and the fact that like anybody can tell you in residency, there are long stretches where you just have to pee and you just have to not pee at that moment and you just wait. And then having children, when there are long stretches where like I need an adult, yeah. I need an adult to come to the room where the kids are so I can go pee and leave the room where the kids are. It's just my second nature now.
Have you considered bringing the children to the bathroom with you?
Oh, I've done it many times.
Okay. I was going to say.
No.
They can just like sit there on their, you know, reading their book or watching their iPad. Mm-hmm. You pee. It's all, everyone's happy.
I would say there are many many parents, many caregivers out there who have peed while holding a child before.
Mm.
Perhaps a sleeping one that you are desperate not to wake up.
You know, it's not comparable exactly, but I feel like from all of my years in the restaurant industry, which very much, at, you know, I'll be working and I need to pee and I know I need to pee, but then we're busy and then it's like 3 hours later and I finally have a break and I don't need to pee anymore and I'm like, where did it go?
That's not good.
It went back.
No, it gave up. It knocked on the door and it said, no one's home. Okay.
No.
I gotta go hang out with your blood. Who knows? But see, now that that's one of the few, I guess, good things, I guess, of being out of work. It's this wonderful luxury of like, oh my gosh, I have to pee and I'm going to immediately. That's so nice. I am always within like 5 feet of my bathroom, which is weird, but also I could pee whenever I want. That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, your bladder thanks you.
Yeah, that
it
is.
Can't go back, so that's not great.
it can't change it can. Its mind. What is it? Does it go to sleep?
No, I mean, I guess after a while, maybe your bladder just gives up. If your bladder gets too distended, it can get like an over-distension injury where it has trouble like expelling all the urine, and you can have some urinary retention later. This is boring.
That's fine.
I don't want to talk about this.
This is fun to talk
about. Podcast.
just straight into the pee talk. Oh yeah.
I want to tell you. Do you know what? Justin committed a food crime against our children
no.
this morning.
Oh.
He made them. He saw a video about ice cream French toast.
That's not okay. Sorry. Go
tell
ahead.
Me more. I need more information.
What you do is you take some ice cream. Vanilla is like the example given. Like that's the easiest thing to do. Take some vanilla ice cream and melt it. Like pop a little bit in the microwave.
So it's like liquid.
Liquid.
Okay.
You need liquid.
Okay.
And you use that as like your French toast batter. You know what I mean? Like you just dump that in like a big pan and then soak your bread in that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then you fry it up just like you do French toast.
Mm-hmm.
And you serve it on a plate that has like a pool of the melted ice cream on it to use as like your syrup kind of replacement, uh-huh. you know? And this is what he served our children for breakfast.
Did they enjoy it?
Here is the wild thing.
They had to have, right?
So Cooper loved it. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie?
No.
Nope.
Charlie like didn't like
she
it?
She said, and I quote, "It's too ice creamy."
Wow.
Charlie McElroy asks for ice cream
all day
for
every day.
Meal mm-hmm. and also after every meal.
We don't give it to her, but she does ask
right.
for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was too ice creamy.
Okay, now I could see okay, the soaking in the ice cream goo, sure. Maybe like it gives it like a sweet vanilla flavor.
I did this with eggnog. I made French toast where I instead of making the batter, I just soaked it in eggnog over the holidays and did it. And I think that's pretty similar. It's not identical, but similar.
But did you place it on a plate in a pool full of eggnog?
No, did not do that.
Liquid does not have the same consistency as a syrup that you can like drizzle on your French toast, but it doesn't make it soggy. But if you just lay it in a pool of melted ice cream, then it moves past French toast sogginess and is just dough, I think.
It was soggy. I will say, like, it was on the, like, if there's a scale of French toast from the crispiest to, like, the mushiest, it was more of the mushy. Although it gets that, like, bread pudding-y kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I thought, I mean, like, I don't know that I could eat a whole plate of it because it was pretty sweet.
Right.
But I thought it would taste good.
I was going to say, there's a lot, like, the difference between melted ice cream and, like, a lot of the batters that you'll dredge French toast in is not really different. Like, when you look at what is in ice cream, like, you're talking about, you know, egg yolks and cream. It's, like, normal stuff for French toast. It's not too far outside of the realm. And, yeah, like, the ice cream bath is weird, but it is... does make sense in, like, a bread pudding sense. I don't know. I don't know if that's a crime. I think that's innovation.
Now, is it a crime because you have two small children and this was their breakfast?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that was probably bad.
Okay.
No, there's that piece of bread in there that negated it being ice cream for breakfast.
So it's breakfast.
Charlie ended up, because she wouldn't eat it, she ended up eating an egg and toast. Just a scrambled egg and toast. Like, a healthier, I guess.
Yeah.
She chose eggs over ice cream bread?
Yes. Yeah. I do this thing where I put a piece of toast in the waffle maker and then I scramble an egg and dump it over it and then squish it all together and it makes like this sort of...
It's an egg toast.
Yeah. She loves that.
That sounds good.
But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I couldn't believe it. He even did the... Like, she looked at me and she took a bite and she looked at me and she said, I don't like it. And I said, oh, honey, that's okay. You tried it.
Yeah.
That's all we ever ask is try a new thing. If you don't like, I'm not going to force my kid to eat ice cream bread.
Yeah.
Like, if it's like a vegetable
thing, sure.
We're going to keep going back for more bites before we decide we don't like it. But if you don't like ice cream bread, that's fine. That's fine. We'll move on.
Good for everybody involved.
And she was like, don't tell daddy. He'll be so sad. And I'm like, no, daddy will understand. It's okay. So she's so worried about this. Justin comes in and I'm like, Justin, Charlie doesn't like the ice cream bread, and I need you to tell her it's okay.
Of course.
She immediately like starts crying.
Like, oh, dear
she
God.
Starts sobbing and eating more of the ice cream bread.
Oh no, that's terrible.
So then we had to convince her that we both support and love her, whether or not she likes ice cream bread.
Oh my God!
And she is the most sensitive.
Yeah,
she is very empathetic.
But
don't worry, all of you out there. She was very happy to eat her egg toast at the end, and Cooper was very happy to eat the ice cream bread that Charlie didn't want.
Yeah. I'm happy for them both.
So.
Will ice cream bread be a regular occurrence in your house?
Never again. Okay. I think after all of the drama associated with it, I'm good now. Also, Justin did not innovate this. I don't know who. He watched a video.
Was it on TikTok?
We ended up watching a YouTube video about it. I don't know if he found it on TikTok and then went to YouTube. I don't know.
It just feels like a TikTok thing. It's like when I saw the cereal they made on TikTok where they took pancake batter and just squirted it in the pan, but just made little tiny dots. So you made little tiny pancakes and then dump that in a bowl and put milk in that.
I've seen that cereal.
That's just like you're eating a bunch of tiny little pancakes in milk, which I guess is cereal.
I like that because I would feel like a giant.
Exactly.
The YouTubers that Charlie likes have all tried this TikTok life hack.
Which one?
Food hack. The one with the pancakes.
I
haven't seen it on TikTok. I've seen the YouTubers trying it to varying degrees of success.
Yeah.
Cooper calls life hacks life packs.
That's good.
You need a life pack. Like sounds like something you pick up in a video game.
A life pack video. I need a Yife Pack video. No, we're not watching a Yife Pack video.
It's so funny to me that young toddlers enjoy watching life pack videos because, like, you don't even really know how to do life yet, but you're already trying to figure out how to hack it.
Like, you can't like, put on pants by yourself and, like, you're figuring out a shortcut to, like, rewiring a microwave or something.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Everybody's always trying to find a way to charge their iPhone with fruit. That's the main thing they're always trying to do.
I did do that for a science fair experiment in like sixth grade. It didn't work.
Let's just talk about this book.
Yeah, there's no good transition.
So we read this week. This feels like a book club.
Welcome, all right, everyone.
Welcome. This week we read Weetzie Bat by Francesca Leah Block, which was from 1989. I read when I was younger and fell in love with and read repeatedly. And now I've made both of you read.
Yes.
And what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I did. I told Sydney before we started that it was a lot, not in a bad way, but just like once stuff starts happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not stop happening until the end of the book, which is good. I mean, I enjoy that, especially in like what I assume was more of a young adult novel when it came out. Yeah.
I think it's in the YA section or whatever. Yeah, YA fiction. You can see on my Borders price tag.
Oh, man.
Right there on the book.
I enjoy that in a young adult novel because I feel like a lot of times young adult novels, especially ones that center around typically young women, always have like one kind of conflict, and usually it involves like a relationship of some sort. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of all they get. But I did appreciate that this was a lot more than that, and also a lot more character development than just like, you know, girl mm-hmm. likes boy, heteronormative society, boy doesn't like girl, but then by the end boy likes girl, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, and it is true that a lot happens, but I liked the way that it's all presented because the writing style of this book is almost like a dream state. It's very, like, there's mm-hmm. no heightened action when something particularly bad is mm-hmm. happening. It's kind of all, you know, you just flow into from one event to the next. So it's still feels like a very relaxing read, even though a lot of very dramatic stuff happens in this book. I don't know. It's an interesting writing style.
It is. It should be said, if anybody is thinking of reading this book, it's definitely, like, it was written in 1989, and I would say that it deals with issues in a less kind of sophisticated way
mm-hmm.
than we would deal with a lot of things now.
Sure.
Like, when it comes to, like, sexuality and stuff.
I mean, it was written in, what, 89?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think, I always hate to like retroactively label something as problematic. There are definitely
sure
ways that we wouldn't, you know, that I think the sexuality is not presented in a modern way and could be talked about, even though they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to be representative of the fact that, hey, not everybody's straight.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's 1989. Yeah. That is part of it. And then reading it again, I forgot how much cultural appropriation
yes
takes place in the book, especially when it comes to indigenous peoples and Native mm-hmm. Americans. There's a lot of that. And I had forgotten that until I read it. And I was like,
I will say I was pleasantly surprised when I started reading. And, you know, we see it's interested in like 50s Americana stuff mm-hmm. And meets Dirk.
Yes.
Who also is, and they bond over this. And my immediate thought was like, oh, well, you know, this is her love interest, I suppose. But then he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleasantly surprised by that, like, this was, I mean, had to have been one of the earliest written examples in a YA novel of, like, a gay young man. And that's okay.
Yeah. I wonder, when I look back and I think about, like, why did I become so obsessed with this book? That was exactly, I remember having that thought, mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, so she's found somebody who's kind of quirky like her mm-hmm. and into the same old sort of stuff she's into, so these two will fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he tells her he's gay, and she's like, that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's that whole point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm gay. Okay.
That's cool.
I thought that was an interesting moment, because even now in media, it seems like we're still stuck on the idea that coming out is this tragic thing, or it's very mm-hmm. you know, you tell your loved ones and you have to give them time to like be disappointed in you or upset, which I think is bogus. Mm-hmm. But like, this is 89 and the response is literally like, hey, I'm gay, and Weetzie Bat is like, oh, that's okay, honey. Like, yeah. Oh man, I wish I'd had a Weetzie Bat to come out to. She's just gonna throw some glitter in the air and be like, no problem.
And then they go duck hunting together.
Yeah.
which is what they call looking for boys.
Yes. Yes.
They're not actually duck hunting.
I would say that would have been weird either way, but...
Yeah. There is no duck murder in this. Thank goodness.
Yes.
We like ducks here. We're very pro-duck here, so...
The names in this book, I just have to mention... When I saw it was named Weetsie Bat, I thought...
That's the name of the main character, by the way.
Yes.
Her name is Weetsie Bat.
I thought it had to be, like, alluding to something or event or... I don't know. I did not think it was someone's name. And that is the main character's name. And mm-hmm. there's Dirk. And then there's Duck.
Yes.
They go duck hunting, but then there's just Duck. And then what is the...
My Secret Agent Lover Man.
My Secret Agent Lover Man. Which I like because it reminds me of, like, the old... kind of overdone trope of like the quote-unquote manic pixie dream girl or whatever, but like it's not about the girl this time, it's my secret agent lover man. I like that they turn it around, make it about a dude,
which to be fair you could level that
at
Weetsie Bat,
yes
for sure.
I just like that they take it to someone else too.
Yes.
Yeah,
well everyone in the book seems to be that.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. they're all manic pixie dream girls.
Sure.
It is a manic pixie dream book.
Yes.
Yes.
It is not just Weetsie Bat who's like showing everybody this like romantic, wild, quirky way to live. They're all living that and they're all into it and part of it. And she has just surrounded herself with other people who share her aesthetic
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like saving men from boredom or whatever.
Yeah. I always think of like Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Ramona Flowers just shows up and is like, look how quirky and wonderful I'm going to save these boring white men.
Mm-hmm. No, and there is none of that in this book. Everybody is colorful and beautiful.
Yeah, it does offbeat. Taste right. It does read like a dream sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It's very mystical.
Yeah,
and part of it, like, so the plot of the book, and there's a lot. It's a very short book, but it is dense.
Yes,
with stuff that happens, with occurrences. But the general idea is pretty straightforward. Weetsie Bat is a young woman. I don't know how young. It's not really clear how young she is when the book begins.
I guess you're right.
She meets a guy, Dirk, who shares her kind of eccentric interests. He tells her he's gay. They go looking for guys together. She... basically, the whole thing sets off because she makes a wish. She, like, finds a magic lamp and rubs the lamp and makes a wish.
Mm-hmm.
And the genie grants her three wishes, which are that Dirk will find a guy and she will find a guy and they'll all live together in a fairy tale house.
Mm-hmm.
And that is essentially the rest of the book.
That is what ends up happening.
Yes. Are these events unfolding? And then, I guess without spoiling it too much, like, how their lives kind of proceed from there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sad stuff. There are characters that, not the main characters, but there are characters who die.
Mm-hmm.
And there's happy stuff. Kids are born.
Multiple. Yes.
And they make movies all together. Mm-hmm. That seems to be how these characters pay their rent.
Yeah.
They own their house, so I guess there's not rent, but the utility bills.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, did you like this because it's a little bit like Dawson's Creek?
I don't know that I would have ever...
It's a little bit like Dawson's
made
Creek.
Made a Dawson's Creek connection.
A little bit. A little bit.
A little bit. On an unrelated note, I didn't tell you all, I had a dream that I took care of Pacey in the hospital.
Of course you did.
Is it a good dream?
It was a very vivid dream, but
what was wrong with Pacey?
He just had a hand injury, and I stitched up his hand, and he was fine.
No, wait,
it was
this
a minor.
I was going to say, this is important. How old was Pacey?
To be fair, it wasn't about Pacey. It was about Joshua
Jackson. That's okay. That's okay. What I wanted to know. Was it Pacey or was it Joshua Jackson?
Yes.
Okay.
Those are very different things.
I did. I had a dream where Joshua Jackson was injured. I don't know why he was here in Huntington, West Virginia, but he was. And he came to my hospital and I had to tend to his wound. And I did. And he was very thankful. And I thanked him for his great work that I very much enjoyed. And he was like, Dawson's Creek. And I was like, I'm actually a huge fan of Fringe too. And he was like, oh, that's so nice to hear. Nobody ever says that. And I'm like, yeah, well, I am. Wow. Thank you. And then he left. That was the whole dream.
Pleasant dream.
But My dreams aren't very exciting.
It sounds exciting for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't like ask me out to dinner. He just said, thanks. I'm so glad you enjoy my body of work. I was like,
Fringe and Dawson's Creek.
I'm glad you, I could stitch up your hand.
It's a very respectful dream.
It was very appropriate.
Well,
Justin can hear all about this dream. He'd be pleased. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I guess you could make that comparison. I do like the idea of all the people who love each other being together all the time, mm-hmm. just being all sort of piled into that one house all together. As yeah. the book progresses, like there are the two couples, and then there's also like, there are babies and there are lots of dogs, and it sounds like it's a very full house. And I,
is this why you also like Full House?
Yeah. Oh, I love on Full House how no one ever leaves.
Yeah.
I think Sydney's dream in life, what Sydney really wants is one day all of us move into this house, into Sydney and Justin's house together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Taylor and I move into a guest room. Mom and Dad move into a guest room. Probably like Travis and Griffin and their wives and their children. And everyone just lives in one house and no one can ever leave.
I really, because we're in West Virginia, I really probably should have been like in a holler. Because, you know, like families do that. Like they all live in a holler together and yeah. you can just walk to everybody's house. And I've always been so envious of that. Yeah. Like I've always wanted that with our family and our extended family as everybody like got married, like just come here, we'll buy all the houses on this street one by one.
I mean, that's what you're starting to and do.
Move into them, and then we can all just live on the same street together. And
Sydney wants like a gated community of just that's a little bit like a
not
cult.
Gated,
that's
not
a little bit
gated.
Like a cult, Sydney.
It is a commune is not wrong. You commune just, is a word.
You want Smackeroy holler.
Holler, commune, whatever word you like.
Yeah.
Neighborhood, village. Maybe that's why I like this book so much. It's sort of yeah. reminiscent of piling all the stuffed animals up on the bed so they won't float away. When we yeah. used to play boat.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's a very...
I'm sorry. This is when we used to play boat.
Didn't you ever play boat?
Not like sailor, pirate, boat.
Boat. We're on a boat.
Taylor, don't you remember boat?
Yeah, I guess I remember boat. I don't know. To me, the point of boat was that, like, there's sharks in the water or there's excitement. I didn't realize that you were just like, now I will never be alone, for we are surrounded by water and we are stuck here together. We played boat at the same time in very different ways.
You all have to stop saying we played boat. I can't hear it anymore. It's going to be
peanuts. That's what it was called. It was called boat. I would say, do you want to play boat? And the point of boat is you had to get everything that had been like anthropomorphized in the room. Anything that we had decided had a soul, which was all our stuffed animals, but also other objects that like were personified, but everything
like,
in the
like
room.
Like what?
Just like, I mean, sometimes I had like little figurines and uh-huh. things that were important to me okay. or like books that I
right. okay.
felt
that's
very
what
close
I was
to.
Waiting for. That's what like, I thought was going to be.
Things like
there.
That had to also be on the bed along with the stuffed animals because
on boat.
Yeah. On boat because they had grown souls and so they had to be saved. And then periodically something would tumble off into the water and we had to save them, and they always got saved. No one ever got eaten.
Everyone got back on boat.
Yeah. Everyone got back on boat. Yeah. And then that was the point, was to be on boat.
Yeah. It was kind of like the floor is lava, except for the floor was water and you were on boat. That's it's, you know.
And you can't leave boat.
No.
Well, no, you could like build like a pillow bridge to get to a sold stuffed animal and rescue it.
just the one that had soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were there any that were stuffed animals that you just collectively decided like not you?
Soulless.
Yeah, I'd say all those porcelain dolls that I had were never made it onto the boat. Just saying.
No, I don't remember if I don't think I would have ever done that, but Tay, I can see you deciding like, yeah, not you.
I think I was very aware of what things in my room did or did not have souls. I had an active like antagonistic relationship with many toys in my room. I was like, you are going to kill me in my sleep. I'm aware of this. It's just a matter of when.
Sorry, that was not about. I couldn't let this show continue without hearing more about Boat.
Well, one thing I do think about this book that I liked that is totally superficial, but upon reading again, I realized was key to my enjoyment is the food.
Mm-hmm.
All of the food descriptions, the very like vivid. Everybody's enjoyment of various locations and situations is always very much tied to the food they get to eat there.
Sure.
And this is how I experience things.
That's how our family kind of experiences things. That's fair.
I like to know about the food that the characters are eating. And I appreciate that.
But, you know, I mean, that's what I really liked the aesthetics of this book, because there is just this constant like rundown of like the hairstyles and the clothing and the colors and the food. It's very like it engages your senses very much. And it kind of reminded me of like almost like of a well-written pop song, you know, that like importance of specificity to make you connect with things. And this book is literally just straight through of that. Which I don't know. I found that very enjoyable, and I also think it makes like when we think of like our best memories or like things that trigger our sentimentality, it's rarely like big life events. It's usually things like this, like having that, you know, eating those like hot dogs on that New York City street corner with like, you know, your old best friend or like whatever, like drinking beers on a rooftop. Like it's very specific, like sensory things that you remember as like your most beloved memory. And there's so many of these in this book. It's really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that really connected with me. It reminded me, this is probably the only time this comparison has ever been made, but it was the one thing that I really loved about the book, The Yearling. Did you ever have to read The Yearling?
I don't think so, no.
I had to read The Yearling when I was in, I don't know, elementary, middle school, something like that. And in it, they live, I don't remember much about it other than they lived like on a farm. And so like everybody would have to get up super early and do a bunch of farm chores. But then they would have breakfast. And the breakfast descriptions in The Yearling, I just like, I wanted to read them over and over again. Like, I don't know where people eat breakfast like this. I don't even like breakfast that much, but like, oh, these breakfasts. Like, I just could live in those breakfasts from The Yearling. Like, I could live in a lot of the food scenes from Weetzie Bat.
I like to imagine that whenever you read this book for school, you had to like write some sort of response or essay or something about like something significant or a symbol, and you just took those scenes, you took the food, said this is the most important part, let me write about this food.
I guarantee you I did. I was obsessed with those food scenes. Like, they just, I like food, yeah, but I just
yeah, I know what you mean. It's like a very underused sensory description in text, I think, is taste. People just don't go there too often, but when you can really get into descriptions of food,
I had the same, you know, it's funny, said I had the same exact experience with the Little House on the Prairie books.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with those, the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, because the way they would describe, and I mean this was like frontier food, so they were eating like hardtack and like, you know, biscuits with honey and just, you know, like, it was such simple stuff, but the way it sounded to me, I was like, I want to eat that. I was obsessed with the way they talked about food and like, you know, like corn cakes and stuff like that, like in those Little House on the Prairie books. I read all of them, I think, just for the cornbread content.
We need to do a whole other, it would have to be like a video series where we just like put all these different like book and whatever media depictions of food to the test. Like, does it live up to what your memory, because I feel like my real life experience with that was Turkish Delight.
Yeah, like in Narnia,
every child's disappointment.
Yes, The first time I tried, because I had read Turkish Delight and I didn't know what it was, but oh my gosh, all I ever wanted to do was eat it. Like, please someday let me try Turkish Delight. I didn't try it till I was in college for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I got the rose flavored one, which I don't know if that's like the classic. That's the
usual one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I tried it and I did not like it at all. And I think part of it is that I have learned this about myself. I don't really like rose flavored things very mm-hmm. much. So there might be other flavors I would have loved, but all I got to try was the rose flavored. I just remember like all those moments from my childhood yeah. of dreaming of Turkish Delight and then trying it and going, oh.
No. I will, yeah. In Turkish Delight's defense, I will say I had some fresh, like from a shop that just actively made it in Istanbul. And that was entirely different. The packaged stuff is nothing like the stuff that's like been made
yeah.
recently. So I think that that's actually pretty good. It still doesn't live up to whatever. My mind conjured up this like golden, like kind of syrupy. I expected it to be there to be like, I don't know, like almost like baklava, but like just soaked in honey was for mm-hmm. some reason how my brain pictured Turkish Delight. Just kind of nice and chewy, but
that's good to know that it there is a version. And I suspected that because I also knew there were other flavors and that if I just maybe didn't like rose flavored, maybe mm-hmm. that was the problem. So, yeah. And then in the movies when they did it with like the powdered sugar all over it.
Oh, yes, we mm-hmm. did a local community theater production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I played Susan, and the boy who played Edmund obviously got to eat Turkish Delight on stage, and we all were so jealous. We were like, oh, we really want to try that. So I remember before anyone had tried it, they were like, okay, you all can have a piece, you know, you mm-hmm. all can try it together. And we all just collectively were so disappointed. We no longer were jealous. He got to eat it on stage because he didn't even want to. But it was the kind that was like covered in powdered sugar and the little like cubes. I have no idea.
And who knows? Sometimes the American version of stuff really
is not ruins right.
what yeah. it's supposed to be, I have learned.
Yeah. Well, I think anything that's like been packaged. It's like fresh marshmallows. Have you ever had like a fresh marshmallow?
Yeah.
And like that's like a treat, but then it's you don't feel the same way about like a marshmallow from the bag. They're fine. Good, it's just though. Like, eh, I'm not excited about that. It'd be yeah. weird to stand around eating them. I don't know.
Well,
Riley's like, well,
what if? No. Okay, no judgment if you do, actually. That's fine.
Well, I was thinking more so of our dad and also your children, Sydney, that will just eat marshmallow.
Yes, my children would just eat marshmallow. Yeah, if I would let them, they would just. Actually, they try a lot. They'll go yeah. steal the bag of marshmallows from the pantry and hide in. Well, they don't hide very well. They just get in Charlie's bed.
Put together it under the covers.
And like get under the covers and start eating marshmallows. And it's like, well, I know where I can find you. They're doing the whole kid thing. If I can't see you, you can't see me.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say I liked about the book is like, as you follow the plot, you have the romance between the main character, Weetzie Bat, and the guy whose name my secret agent lover man, which like they sort of explain why these names are odd in the sense that she makes a wish that her best friend Dirk finds a duck
mm-hmm.
and then he finds a guy named Duck.
Yeah.
And that she will find her secret agent lover man and she finds a guy named my secret agent lover man.
Yeah.
So like it's magical.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of put that there. But you have the relationship between the two of them and they have like a falling out and then get back together kind of thing. But then the romance between Dirk and Duck I found really moving and I love that was out there for teenagers when I was a teenager because I mean it was so long ago and you didn't see these kinds of depictions. But Duck gets freaked out about love because what is insinuated in the book is that one of his friends has AIDS
mm-hmm.
yeah
has HIV and then is sick enough that I it's kind of insinuated he has AIDS
mm-hmm.
and Duck kind of just freaks out about the whole thing and takes off.
Mm-hmm.
And Dirk goes to find him. And I always found that scene where he just happens to find him in the right bar in basically all of California.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just went somewhere looking for him and finds him. I always found that like a really romantic, loving, lovely scene. And it's great because at that point in time for the really kind of sweeping romantic conclusion to be between the two male characters and not the straight couple,
right,
would have been pretty unusual.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, and it's really beautiful imagery too, because like Dirk keeps saying, you're in my blood. And then Duck is kind of, you know, comparatively talking about how he like cut himself shaving or something and saw his blood. And that's kind of the fear. And that's the reference to AIDS, of like how our love can be dangerous or how our blood can be dangerous. And then it's, you know, wrapped up with, but you're in my blood, and they find each other. It's rare that the gay romance is actually more romantic than the straight one, so I was here for that.
Yeah.
It was like a precursor to Schitt's Creek.
That's exactly what I was about to say. That it's like the Patrick and David.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of Alexis and Ted.
Which was also a good romance, but like...
Not as good.
You're there for David and Patrick.
Right.
Like... Yeah. but yeah, I love that, and I wonder, when I think about, like, even though we grew up here in West Virginia, where, like, things aren't the most progressive.
Sure.
Typically. I always feel like we had sort of ingrained in us more progressive attitudes than the people around us. Mm-hmm. Not in our family, but, like, other kids at school and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I know part of that is because of our family and how we were raised and the values we were taught and stuff like that. But I also wonder how much of it was exposure to things like this, where like I read this and fell in love with this and fell in love with the characters in this book. And I was so young, and all of this seemed completely normal to me. There was nothing about it that seemed like, ooh, you're not supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. Or, ooh, that's bad. Or, oh, some people think that's, it was just, this is great.
Right.
And these characters love each other. And isn't that sweet and wonderful? And
yeah.
I don't know.
You know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to change topics. Go ahead.
I was also going to change topics.
Well, I was going to say, because, I mean, likewise, they talk about abortion in this book. And it's mentioned briefly, but basically when Wheatsy and Secret Lover Man have their falling out, Secret Agent Lover Man sleeps with other woman and she gets pregnant. And so she asks him for money for an abortion, and he gives it to her. And it's kind of not like that's the extent of the discussion around it. So it's, in a way, it's treating it like a very normal possibility. It's for a teen book in the 80s, 90s. I think that's pretty important, that that's just treated as that's what she's decided to do. So that's the option.
Yeah. I was going to, when you were talking about like exposing yourself to that kind of media that was more inclusive, I was thinking about how when I was growing up, I didn't necessarily have that. Like, I think about all the Disney shows and Nickelodeon shows I watched. There weren't necessarily any not straight characters that I remember, at least being as like open and accepted as the characters in this book. But I was thinking about JoJo Siwa because although I am no longer a young as impressionable child, I think about like she's a real person, but also kind of like a character that lots of little kids, I mean, Charlie Six and Charlie loves JoJo Siwa, look up to. And she just came out as queer. I don't think she has labeled herself yet.
Yeah.
Straight.
She was wearing that shirt that said best gay cousin ever.
Yeah.
So
she said in her video she just loves humans. So not straight.
I didn't see that. Okay.
But I mean, still, there's a character / real person that little kids are like, okay, that's, you know, still JoJo Siwa, and I still like her bows.
Yeah.
and that's it.
I like that JoJo Siwa has been covering herself in rainbows for like so long, and now we're like,
it did not. Charlie was like, oh, okay. I mean, that was kind of the extent of that, because I thought like, oh, that's good for me to, hey, look, JoJo Siwa just put out this video and this is what she said. And that was pretty much the extent of her reaction. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And then they go back to her and Cooper like to play JoJo and Bobo. Bobo is JoJo's dog.
Does Cooper play the dog?
Yes.
Okay.
Cooper
okay.
is Bobo the dog, and they'll play. She'll be JoJo. And they, by the way, they are now obsessed with going to Omaha.
What?
I guess that's where she's from.
Oh, I didn't know that.
your kids want to go to Omaha.
They are obsessed with going to Omaha. Like, both of them have come up independently. Like, Charlie did first. She went, Mommy, when the pandemic's over, when the pandemic's over and we can travel again, can we go to Omaha?
Not Disney. Not, I don't know, anywhere else.
And I said, what? why? And she went, well, in the JoJo movie that we're watching, JoJo's from Omaha, and you can go to Omaha because that's where JoJo's house is or something. And I'm like, well, we probably can't go to JoJo's house. That would be weird. We can't do that, but we could go to Omaha, I guess. There's probably some stuff to do there. I don't know. Never been. I'm sure there's stuff to do everywhere.
Yeah.
There's probably some stuff there. And she was like, okay, I really want to go to Omaha. And then later, Cooper walked up to me and went, Mommy.
Cooper is too.
Mommy, can we go to Omaha? I said, what? They're obsessed with the idea of Omaha now because that's where JoJo and Bobo are.
Well.
So. Can we go to Omaha?
First trip after the pandemic. Omaha.
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 There you go.
Wow.
I know. But, they always say that, too. Both Cooper will say that, too, when, well, she'll say the sickness.
The sickness goes away.
When there's no more sickness. But Charlie will say, after the after coronavirus is gone, after the pandemic.
She has said that many times when I've talked about, like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah, this got canceled. She's always like, oh, because of the coronavirus. Yeah. Yep. You're right.
She doesn't call it COVID. She always says coronavirus.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, there's JoJo, who, yes, is a real person, but is the same kind of thing. Kids are now being exposed to that kind of media. And other important conversations, like Tay was talking about how they talk about abortion that way. And I just feel like that's the kind of stuff that even I didn't really read anything like that growing up. Probably, 20 years after this book came out when I was starting to like read young adult books, probably longer. And I didn't read anything like that. So,
and that sort of, I think, you know, as much as the constant narrative in those sort of cases, you know, there's a lot of dramatic representations of queer lives and, you know, abortion stories out there, but like to have them presented in like a low key, just like, this is just life. This is just the way people are. These are just some roads you might take, is so refreshing. And I think it's so important. And I mean, I read that this book was Texas, of course, tried to ban it when it was out.
Because, sure. Really?
Because we don't want people to think that you can, because it's so funny too. Because like, it could have like a nice, aesthetically pleasing, pleasant life in LA, but you can also be gay while you do it.
That's so wild. I guess that makes sense. I don't know. It's funny for me to think about how did mom got this for me. And I wonder how she, I wonder if it was just like the cover.
That's what I was going to say.
It's really pretty. The book is a really nice cover.
It's a very pretty book. And, you know, the other thing about it is I was looking at the Borders price tag on it. And it was the one that she got me was listed as the 10th anniversary edition, which means I must have gotten this in 1999.
Yeah.
And it's the hardback one. So I bet it was like sitting out on one of the tables at Borders, you know, like where they display new things that came out. I bet it was sitting out as like a good gift idea or like on the YA fiction table or something like that. And I bet it was that simple. Like mom looked at it and was like, oh, this looks like something maybe Sydney would like. And I mean, I read everything back then. So, but I'm really glad she did because I loved it. I read it obsessively.
Yeah.
I have held on to it. It is with my, like, it is in my office with my medical texts. I keep like the books that are most important to me, like the medical stuff that I reference for my other podcast, but I also keep like the books that I super love. Mm-hmm. Things like The Princess Bride are there.
Sure.
And Weetzie Bat, because I've read it over and over again.
Well, I'm glad mom introduced you to it because now we got to read it. Oh, yeah. So,
thank you both for reading it.
Of course,
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving it to us. I loved it. I thought it was just, I don't know. I mean, I kind of it's the sort of story that I like, you know, because I feel like that's just, it's real life happens, but it's just, it's how you look at it sometimes, and you know that the big or horrible or amazing things that happen sit right next to that really good, you know, that really good burrito you had on the pier.
it's
kind of just how life is.
I think it is. I think it's a nice tasty little book.
Tasty little morsel of a
book. It is. All right, what's next, Tay?
I want to make y'all watch some anime. I want to bring Howl's Moving Castle, a 2004 animated film by Studio Ghibli, to the table. It's based off of a book. We don't have to read the books, but just watch the movie.
All right.
All right. Exciting.
That sounds good. I think yes. Charlie will enjoy that with me.
It's a lovely film. Be a
nice little break from school.
Yes.
This weekend, I take a little break.
There you go.
Watch a nice movie.
Well, excellent. Well, we will check that out for next week. And thank you both again. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And check out this book, Weetzie Bad, if you're so interested, if it sounds like something that might be up your alley. It is good. I would say age range, like I would have read it in high school. And it's probably because there are some, like I said, some darker storylines, mm-hmm. like yeah. that deal with death and stuff, that it's probably an older teenage book, mm-hmm. you know, and then adults too.
Yeah.
Thank you to Maximum Fun. You should go to MaximumFun.org if you want to listen to a lot of wonderful podcasts you would enjoy. You can tweet at us at StillBuff. You can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org if you have thoughts or suggestions or questions or comments or anything you want to share. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby, Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am Still Buffering.
And
I am too.
I'm going to go ask your kids if they want to play boat.
You got to teach them boat.
Best game. Boat.
Boat.
Sid, is Cooper your witch baby?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Charlie's my love warrior.
I'm going first. It's me, Jackie Cation.
Man, she's always this bossy. Hi. I'm Lori Kilmartin. We're a bunch of stand-up comics, and we've been doing comedy like 60 years total with both of us, but we look amazing.
Working out. We drop every Monday on Max Fun, and it's called The Jackie Lori Show, and you could listen to it and learn about comedy and learn about anger management and all the things.
And Jackie is married but childless, and I'm unmarried but child full. So together, we make one complete woman.
Is that just where that one's going to end?
Yeah. And we try to make Kyle laugh just like that and say, oh my God, every episode.
It's a good job.
Jackie and Lori Show, Mondays, only on Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.